Welcome back, ghosts, ghouls, and things that go bump in the night. Now, most of you probably remember that last week I was gifted a very unique journal. It was sent to me by someone named Autumn, and Autumn works at the Hotel Bella Morte. And she's been gracious enough to write down some of her experiences and share them with us. Well, listeners, let me tell you, her journal has me hooked, and I can't wait to read you the next entry. So, why don't you sit back, relax, and listen in for the Hotel Bella Morte, The Gaunt Man. It took me a minute to realize what the ringing bell signaled. The hotel had its first resident. Well, not first resident, just the first since I got there. I quickly closed the wardrobe and headed down the long hall to the staircase. From the top, I could make out the outline of a man with his back to me. I assume he heard me coming, because he turned just as I started descending the stairs. And it would be fair to say, I was a little startled by his appearance. He must have been at least 6'4", perhaps even a little taller than that, with a grayish-blue pallor to his skin, dressed in a gray evening jacket and matching pants, shiny black leather dress shoes, and, despite the warm summer day, oddly enough, black leather gloves. To complete the look, he also had a gray bowler hat. His frame was that of a walking stick, bigger around his middle, with only twigs for arms and legs. His face was gaunt and long. The bags under his eyes had their own shadow. He had a slight bowing of his frame, as if the weight of his bones drug him down a little, and he smelled strangely of soot and smoke. If I didn't know any better, I would have thought I was looking at someone who would have once belonged in Victorian times. "Oh, hello," I said as I straightened my blouse and tucked a strand of my auburn hair behind my ear. "Good day, ma'am," he replied as he tipped his hat. "'Tis a fine afternoon for adventures, isn't it?" "Well, yes, I suppose. How may we serve you today here at the Hotel Bella Morte?" I rattled off, trying to remember the exact phrasing from the rules in the letter. "Ah, yes. Well, if you would be so kind, I would like a room. My special room, if you please." I was a little confused, to say the least. This man had obviously been here before, but in the letter, under the section that dealt with frequent residents, there was no one that seemed to match his description. "Yes, sir, we would be happy to offer you a room for your stay with us," I replied. "And what name would I be putting on your doorplate?" "You can put down Mr. Elberton," he stated as he straightened up to his full height. "Mr. Elberton, Mr. Elberton." I searched my mind for the name. Then it hit me. "Mr. Elberton!" He was listed under rule number 78. Or was it 73? Anyway, he was listed somewhere in that letter. His note said, "Be sure to always give Mr. Elberton room number 8, and never accept his proposal for an adventure." I walked behind the man and around the back end of the desk, and wrote down his name on the doorplate and grabbed the key to his room. After accepting payment from the man, which was oddly entirely in quarters, and all of them dated 1856, surprisingly, I walked him to his room, which was thankfully at the first end of the first hallway, and handed him the key after opening the door. He took the key from my outstretched hand, every bone in his hands and arms creaking and protesting as he took it. "I thank you kindly, ma'am, and if you are ever up for an adventure, come and see me, you hear?" he said as he disappeared into the room, shutting the door quietly behind him. I was left in a state of what I could only call anxious bewilderment. There was nothing wrong with this man, other than he could have stood to eat a few hamburgers and drink some fattening milkshakes. Yet, there was something about him that just seemed off. The whole situation since I first walked through the door seemed off for that matter, and I just kept getting more strange and unusual. I walked back down the hallway, and I had just gotten to the stairs when I heard a door open behind me. Thinking it was Mr. Elberton, I turned around to see what he needed, and was met with absolutely nothing. No Mr. Elberton, no open door, just nothing. It didn't quite hit me until a few hours later, after having Mr. Elberton frequently and excitedly come out of his room to invite me to go on an adventure with him at least a dozen times, that I was the only employee. And in being the only employee, that meant every duty in the hotel was mine to do, from the cooking and the cleaning, to general front desk duties, to the entertaining and hospitality. Every single duty was mine to do. And if that was true, and I knew it was, as it was outlined by the letter, then why did I smell the most amazing smell of food that I hadn't smelled in a long time? Perhaps not since I had left home and my mother's good dinners. That's when it hit me in the letter that of all of the literal 100-some-odd duties outlined, not a single one said anything about cooking meals. But if I was the only employee, who made the food I was getting a whiff of? Maybe Mary or Martha were here. I quickly made it up the steps and turned at the end of the hallway, and walked into the dining room where I found the source of the delicious smell. In the dining room, on the side tables, was laid a full 4-course meal. This left me stunned. Who had made all this food without me knowing or hearing them? I quickly walked back into the kitchen, and then at the back of the dining hall, to see if maybe someone was there, but much to my dismay, there wasn't. The kitchen wasn't even dirty, as you would have expected it to be. I walked over to the oven and felt the outside of the glass. No warmth radiated from the appliance. Now my anxious bewilderment had turned to outright anxiety. How had someone gotten by me on the way to the dining hall and made this spread without my knowledge? Was it perhaps when I had been on my phone? That just didn't seem right. It would have taken multiple trips to have brought everything in, and no one had passed by my desk. As I stood there floundering, I heard a familiar voice behind me. "Good evening, ma'am." I startled a bit and spun around to see Mr. Elberton behind me. "Oh, good evening, Mr. Elberton." "And a fine evening it is, too. I was chased from my room by this delicious smell and came to investigate. What do we have here?" he said as he walked over to the first side table. That was the first time I truly bothered to look and actually see what was in there. Before us was a salad bowl made on the finest crystal, and in it was filled to the brim with what looked like a salad. To the right, there was a large baked chicken, baked to a cold and brown perfection. And then there were the sides. There were, of course, mashed potatoes, baked potatoes, boiled potatoes, potatoes au gratin, just about every kind of potato there was to be had, as if the cook couldn't decide on any one type of potato, so he just chose all of them. A big plate of Brussels sprouts, no thank you, and broccoli, green beans, and asparagus. Then there was that weird dessert ice creamy type stuff that's meant to cleanse the palate. And then last but not least, the desserts. Now, I love dessert just as much as the next person, but the amount of desserts at that table was ridiculous. There were different types of cake, multiple pies, dozens of pastries, and at least 14, I don't know, I stopped counting at 14, but more than 14 types of cookies. I was dumbstruck. Everything looked and smelled wonderful, but who knows where any of this stuff came from, And did I want to risk it? I thought, even as my mouth watered in anticipation. I hadn't eaten lunch, so I was pretty hungry. "Ladies first," said Mr. Elberton as he motioned to the table. "I think I'm good. I'm not feeling very hungry at the moment," I lied. "Suit yourself," Mr. Elberton replied as he began to dig into the salad. I watched as he made sure to get a little of everything, which was quite impressive to watch. I would have thought his thin, bony arm would snap in two at the weight of the plate alone, but he managed it without trouble and went to sit at the closest dining table. That's when he spoke again. "Would you like to go on an adventure with me?" he asked, raising an eyebrow. Now, this was easily the 16th time Mr. Elberton had asked me to go on an adventure with him. All the other times he asked, I politely declined, and he disappointedly walked away. I was trying to keep the rules, and the rules clearly stated never to accept his proposal for an adventure. But in that moment, I had forgotten the rules. I was still freaking out over the food when I half-knowingly replied, "Yeah, of course." That was when his face lit up, and it seemed that his face grew somehow longer, and a big, toothy grin played on it, and he practically jumped up from his chair. "At last," he exclaimed, "we shall have an adventure." And with that, he left his food on the table and reached his big hand with those long, spindly fingers and took mine in his, and with that, off we went. Down the hall and down the stairs, out of the hotel and down the street, to what I would have considered the end of town, and then, for some reason, back again. Back down the street, into the hotel, and then we went directly back to the dining room. Everything was as we had left it, except for the addition of at least 40-some-odd people, all dressed similarly to Mr. Elberton in Victorian dress, chatting and laughing and overall having a good time. I entered the room with him, and the crowd all stopped and stared, looking me up and down, and I suddenly felt very uncomfortable. As people began to lean over and whisper to one another, Mr. Elberton began to talk.
"Good evening, everyone. As I'm sure you have noticed, we have a new guest with us tonight. Her name is... my dear, I'm quite afraid I don't know your name. Perhaps you can share it with us all."
My name is Autumn," I said very sheepishly to the large crowd.
"Ah, Autumn, a lovely name. We are all so pleased to meet you, Autumn, especially considering she is our new caretaker."
And almost as soon as the words flowed from his mouth, everyone in unison began to look from each other to me, then back again. And to my surprise, everyone began to clap. Why they were clapping, I didn't know yet. As soon as the clapping died down, one particular lady, dressed in a beautiful, deep red evening gown, stood and spoke. "We are so very pleased to have a caretaker once again. It is our pleasure to have you. Now please, come and sit. Have a bite to eat with us." I, no longer petrified by embarrassment and fear, walked over to the table where the lady in red sat, and Mr. Elberton walked close behind. Sitting right where we left it, right where he had been sitting before, was his exact plate of food, still hot from before. He sat in his place, and I slowly eased into the only empty chair left at the table. I still had no idea what had happened, or how all these people suddenly showed up, but if nothing else, I was about to find it out. "Just what exactly happened?" I asked the gaunt man sitting in front of me.
"We took a little trip. Nothing more, nothing less."
"But how did all these people suddenly get in here? It wasn't like they were all just hiding in your suitcase, or just popped out of thin air," I said sarcastically.
"Oh, but they did. We all do. That's why life is an adventure,"
he replied. I rolled my eyes. What kind of game was this man playing, and why did I agree to play along? That's when the lady in red spoke. Tell me, Autumn, do you like it here at our fine hotel?
I guess I like it. I haven't been here but a day.
Well, I think you'll come to like, and maybe one day, appreciate this place, she said.
I hope so too, but tell me, what are you all doing here, and how did you get here so fast?
She looked at me, puzzled, then looked from me to Mr. Elberton.
You didn't tell her?
Well, I just assumed she already knew,
he replied slowly.
No, what?
I asked. The lady in red looked back at me and looked me straight in the eye as she put her hand on mine.
This is a very special place. That's why we are all here. You see, when this place was made, it was built on special land by a special man, and everything that went into building it was special as well. This hotel exists in this world for sure, yet at the same time, it is not bound by regular logic and rule.
Now I was even more confused than before. What do you mean it's not bound by regular logic and rules?
This place is not in any one timeline, nor is it in any one place for long. It is everywhere and nowhere at once. And it exists only in the memory of those who have knowledge of it, she said.
That makes no sense. Not a single part of any of that makes any sense.
Oh, but it does. In fact, you've already seen it for yourself, she replied as she gestured through the whole room. You just don't know it yet, but you soon will.
I looked around the room. All the people were no longer staring and had gone back to whatever they had been doing previously. I found it hard to believe what the lady in red had said. None of it was what I would call a normal thought pattern.
It's not in any one timeline, nor is it any one for long. It is everywhere and nowhere at once, and it exists only in memory of those who have knowledge of it. That's when it hit me harder than a ton of bricks. I surveyed the room once again, looking at each person, the way they dressed, the time period the room seemed to be set in, and then I looked between the lady in red and Mr. Elberton, who both looked like they were awaiting the very question I was about to ask.
What year is it?
They both laughed then, looking at each other as they did. Once their laughter had died down a bit, the lady in red responded,
Oh, you poor thing, you look as though you're a deer caught in the spotlight. You, my dear, are currently in 1856. And what a wonderful year it is, too,
Mr. Elberton added. I felt sick, dizzy, my mind swimming with everything that had transpired in the last few moments.
What do you mean, 1856? It's not 1856, it's 2013. It's June 25th, 2013. I know. I had it circled in red on my calendar this morning. How could we have gone back in time in just the few short minutes, just by walking down the street? I directed towards Mr. Elberton.
You said you wanted an adventure, and an adventure is what I gave you. You don't always get to pick the destination, of course. I was dumbstruck. Here I was with a strange man, whose first name I didn't even know. At least, I didn't think Elberton was his first name. But who really knows? He had somehow taken me back in time, to 1856, apparently, and I had no idea how, and I had no way of getting back to my own era. What was I to do?
I slowly rose from the table, still looking at Mr. Elberton. I would like to go back home, back to June 25th, at precisely the moment we left.
Mr. Elberton looked at me blankly, then slowly said,
I can't.
I snorted. What do you mean? You can't or you won't?
I can't. I can take you back to a similar time frame, perhaps even to the same week, but never an exact time. That's not how it works,
he said. Well, then take me back as close as possible. I want to go home. Home? Strange that in the few short hours of working at the hotel, I had already come to consider it home.
Very well, then,
he said as he shook his head.
Very well.
He rose from the table and bid the lady in red goodbye and goodnight, and started to walk towards the door. As I rose to follow him, the lady in red called out to me, Goodbye and good night. I look forward to seeing you again, and I have a feeling it will be sooner than later. I nodded in her general direction, and then walked over to meet the gaunt man standing in the doorframe. He took my hand once again. Colder than ice was his hand, and I shuddered just feeling it. Then, same as before, he dragged me from the room, down the hall and the staircase, past all the buildings in town, and towards the very edge of the town. This time I wasn't stumbling behind him, and I saw him reach out as if he were grabbing something, and then he speedily ran us back to the hotel. Once we got back inside, he let go of my hand and walked to the middle of the room. I looked around, and to my surprise, no one else was there. No loud clinking of plates coming from upstairs. No loud, idle chattering. Nothing. I looked back at Mr. Elberton and asked, So, that's it? We're back? Just like that? Yes, just like that, he said with a smile. I think I'll head up to my room for the night if you don't mind. Perhaps another day we can go on another adventure that's more satisfactory. In the meantime, I hope you rest well. Good night. And with that, he began his trek up the stairs. I looked at the grandfather clock in the lobby. It read 12:13 p.m. I don't know how long I had been gone or what time we had left, but it was certainly late now. I decided to call it a night and head up to my room, but before I did, I finished locking up and all the other end-of-night duties. I had had enough surprises for the night. I headed up the stairs and went down the long halls. The place seemed unfamiliar still, and that's when I noticed, right there on the wall at the end of the second hall, a picture. To be more precise, a picture of the dining hall during some large gathering. The photo spanned the entirety of the room. At first glance, there was nothing remarkable in the photo. That's when my eye caught a floor-length, crimson-red dress. I took a closer look at the photo, and I felt my breath hitch. The photo was like any other black-and-white photo, with the exception of the lady in red. Her dress was the only thing of color in the whole picture. Next to her in the photo, on her right side, was Mr. Elberton, dressed in all gray, but on her left was, well, me. Complete with the out-of-style clothes for the time period, and the puzzled expression I'm sure I had worn on my face for most of the night. Under the photo was a placard that read, Midsummer's Evening Soiree, 1856. It took a couple of minutes before my breath returned to a more normal rhythm. How and when was my photo taken, and by who? I don't remember anyone having taken my photo at the evening party. I tried to shake the violated feeling I now had, and slowly turned away from the photo. Continuing down the hall, I came to my door and slowly opened it. After shutting and locking it, I fell into a slump on my bed. I reached over and set the clock to go off in the morning at 7 a.m., and laid there staring mindlessly at the ceiling. Before I knew it, my eyelids began to droop, not realizing how tired I had become, almost as if I had walked 100,000 miles that day. I quickly fell asleep. And that, listeners, is the story of the Gaunt Man and his visit at the Hotel Bella Morte. I hope you guys are enjoying these journal entries. I just think it's so fascinating, and while I haven't finished them all myself yet, I can't wait to see what else the hotel has in store for all of us. If you've had any fun hotel experiences, or if you just have a story you think we would find interesting, please send it in to me. You can always find me on Facebook at Haunted Horror Story and Podcast, or you can send me an email at hauntedhorrorstorian@gmail.com. I'm afraid that's all the journal we have time for this week, my friends. But until next time, stay spooky, and remember,
sometimes it's more than just a story.